Our next speaker is Ronald Doering, who has experience and expertise in food and agricultural law. He's a counselor for the firm of Gowling, Lafleur, and Henderson in Ottawa. But previously, he was the president of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and he's worked for Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. Ronald?
Well, thank you, and thank you for the invitation. This is a big subject for, so for an old lawyer and former regulator, I'm going to go small for a bit, if you can bear with me. You'll also see I don't do PowerPoints, so hang in there. In March 25th, 1998, the ambassador for Guatemala came to see me when I was the president of the Food Inspection Agency. He pointed out that the Americans the previous November had banned any export of their raspberries to the United States. This is when Clinton was dining out on the fact that there were quite a number of people who actually produced raspberries in the United States, etc. And clearly, from our perspective, was a more of a protectionist action than anything else. There had been stories about the raspberries in Guatemala causing cyclosporosis, not confirmed. Anyway, his argument to me was, we have a completely safe facility. We have a perfect facility here. What basis, morally, do you not allow Guatemala raspberries to come to Canada? The decision was mine. We put it off. It was a lot easier to simply say, well, the Americans are banning it, so we too will. That's kind of a safest thing maybe to do. But he also reminded me that he met me at a AICA conference in Costa Rica just a few months before, where we'd all heard about them. The dilemma for developing countries to export products if the developed countries had these standards that they couldn't possibly meet. And so he kind of shamed me into sort of saying, okay, I just won't ban them. I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll send an expert to Guatemala, and we'll do a risk assessment. It's a serious one, the way we said we should. And so Rennie Cardinal went to Guatemala, and he found a really tough, great facility. They filtered their water, the water they used for the pesticides. They had one of the big companies, SGS, one of those, to oversee the standards and make sure that they had high HACCP standards for their work. And so Rennie came back and said, frankly, Ron, we don't have a moral right to turn this down. We don't even have a legal right. What do we mean by legal right? For a moment, I think I'm the token old lawyer on this panel. There is a thing called the Sanitary Agreement of January 1995. It was designed to curb the use of unjustified sanitary standards for the purpose of trade protection. Basically, you can get the benefits of exporting your products, you can stop people from exporting to you by saying, oh, you don't meet our standard. Sanitary being human health standards, and the phytosanitary being the standard for taking to plants, animals as well. And so under the existing agreement, we weren't in a position to justify. We had no risk assessment whatsoever to justify saying that we couldn't allow it in. You can have a higher standard under SBS if you've got a science-based risk assessment that allows you to set this at a higher standard. We certainly didn't have that. And so I was confronted with the situation where it seemed the morally right thing to do, and indeed the legal thing to do. I also was cognizant of the fact that the previous year, both Texas and then Ontario had concluded that tomatoes were the source of the cyclosporol outbreak. And about a month later, after the tomato industry had been ruined, they said, no, it wasn't. It wasn't tomatoes. And so there's a lot of confusion here. The science wasn't clear. And so we had a decision to make. Do you let the Guatemala raspberries in or not? So if you had my job, what would you do? You do if you had my job. Science is about uncertainty. Regulations about certainty. You either do or you don't. So would you let it in or not? So you keep saying, of course. Which is what I did. And then on June 11th, 1998, 60 people came down in Toronto with serious cases of cyclosporosis. Really sick. And it's a fact, the source was Guatemala raspberries. With the hindsight that academics often have, and the media have, we were severely criticized that the Americans had handled this issue better than we had. These people were seriously sick in Toronto, all from the competence of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. This is the iron law of being a food regulator. You either overreact or criticize for underreacting. But anyway, the general point here is that this is the real world of food safety and a mobilized food system. That you can't really deal with much of this stuff in the real world and not be caught in these kinds of contradictions. So this panel, which I had a chance to ask you to be on, asked this question: will stringent food safety regulations restrict the trading potential and the ability of some companies to export? And the answer is clearly yes, absolutely yes. In fact, if anything is going more in that direction, for essentially political reasons, so President Obama has brought in this Food Safety Modernization Act. The whole thing is premised on we got to do something about all this terrible problems of imported food. In the case of Canada, of course, most of our problems turned to be recalls of food from the United States, the gold standard of food safety, but that's another story. There is a whole thing about we got to stop China. It's a win-win for countries. You create jobs for your own people, and you stop this, and you say you're doing something about the terrible food safety danger of imported food. The second question that I think needs to be posed is, can the phytosanitary World Trade Organization agreement help? Can it help? The whole thing was designed to say we shouldn't allow these standards to be protections. We shouldn't allow these standards to be essentially technical barriers of trade. And they're easy to be technical barriers of trade, easy to be protections, because they're so technical that you know, you can easily hide these things when you're simply saying, no, we're doing this to protect our people. There are three reasons, I think, why the SBS agreement has not lived up to its hopes or expectations at the time. I was around at Agriculture Canada when this was being negotiated by one of my colleagues. The first reason why I don't think it's going to help all that much is that the remedy under the WTO SBS is extremely time-consuming. You can go every year to Rome and shame the country that you say is using SBS standards to as protectionism. You can shame them. And if you're really pushed, you can even bring an action under the WTO. When I was the president of the Food Inspection Agency, we brought such an action against Europe on their ban on the basis of protectionist reasons, no scientific support whatsoever of genetically modified foods. And it took us 4 years. We won three cases. It took us 4 years to get through that process. It's still never actually broken because of the reasons I'll come back to in terms of what the remedy is. We also took Australia to the WTO on the basis that they were stopping the export of Canadian salmon. They didn't have the science support to what they were doing. It was a protectionist thing by Australia. That salmon case took 4 years. I'm currently counsel to Canadian and Greenlandic Inuit on the sealskin ban. The WTO action that the government of Canada is doing is into its third year, and is likely to take three more, so that's why we're suing the EU. So, therefore, you've got a problem in terms of the remedy under SBS and WTO. Secondly, why it can't help is the countries can have these higher standards so long as they do a scientific risk assessment. Well, one of the things that that ignores is that these so-called scientific risk assessments, of course, have two functions: the risk assessment, the so-called science-based risk assessment, but also the policy-based risk management decisions. And almost any country can come up with a risk analysis to say that, no, we don't think that you should let it in here. Our higher standard is perfectly justified. Much of the SBS agreement is based on this idea that science is certain, that it's objective, and that you can separate science and policy. You can't, of course. No risk assessment can divorce itself from policy considerations. Every risk assessment is imbued with policy considerations. And so, therefore, this idea that we had an objective kind of machine over there that would be able to determine who was in protectionism, not protection, just isn't working. And anybody really understood science-based regulatory matters would have said that at the time. And the third reason is that even if you win, that there is no authority on anybody to impose anything on the country that's being protectionist. The most you can do is have a remedial measure where you're allowed to put in a higher tariff by way of some kind of remedy. And so in the case of the EU having lost both on beef hormones and having lost on GM, in both cases there's still no sale of GM or Canadian beef. But of course we now have a tariff on EU pickles, why you can't get pickles from the EU. So this is an example of just how this is not really a really useful remedy for the developing countries that are being hurt by these things. And know this is controversial in this room. Already had this when I was here at McGill last time when we began the Ian Monroe Institute of Food Safety. I made a comment then that I thought that it was quite awful that the EU protectionism had meant that many African countries weren't able to export or either grow or export GM products. Who knows how many people are starving to death because of that kind of EU protectionism. Similarly, the EU invented this notion of precautionary principle. It is, at best, a meaningless notion, and at worst, an invidious concept. You can always say that on a precautionary principle, we still haven't done enough science, therefore we're not going to let your product come to our country. But of course, this is an area that deserves, seems to be much more study. This whole area of SPS, the legal aspects of global food security is really important. I was interested in kind of Robert's comment on that. Clearly, we need to be doing more about this. It's clearly the biggest public policy challenge of our time. As I say, I'm no expert on this, but it seems to me that the whole issue raises profound ideological issues as well as science and policy issues that we're going to have to get our head around. The other thing that's potentially really hurtful to the developing countries in terms of their security is that the big food companies, the big international food companies, have decided that they can't bother dealing with the governments anymore. So what they've created is their own system, the Global Food Safety Initiative, where in order to protect their brand, they're going to go all the way back the food chain and make sure they've got third-party auditors for anybody who provides an ingredient for their food. Frozen pizza has 32 ingredients in it. A frozen pepperoni pizza has over 40. So if you're a frozen pizza manufacturer, you want to make sure you know where all those little ingredients come from, because any one of them, with Listeria, E. coli, 0.7, et cetera, can hurt your brand. So now they've got a system of private auditors who will audit every ingredient manufacturer, and the big retailers, the Walmarts, the Loblaws, Sobeys, Metro of Canada, they're basically saying, if you're not GFSI certified, we're not buying your product. Well, this is going to get really tough for developing countries, very, very difficult for developing countries if they have to meet these private standards. So anyway, to conclude, it seems to me that this is a fascinating area. I'm happy to be here to talk about it, but it also seems to me that we need to spend a lot more time on taking a good, hard look at the 1995 SPS agreement, if there's some way that we could mitigate the negative implications for developing countries. Because if we don't, it's going to be real hard to develop this idea of trade, not aid, et cetera. Anyway, those are my remarks. Thanks very much.